Hi everyone, I'm Gary Noll. Today, how a strong life purpose eases loneliness, especially of COVID-19 isolation. University of Pennsylvania, those who felt their life was guided by meaningful values or goals were more willing to engage in COVID-protective behaviors. That's good news. I have a lot more to share today in health and healing. Again, always some peer-reviewed journals, always quality information. University of Kansas Medical Center, I'm going to talk about what happens when you have more DHA in your body from the omega-3 fatty acids and how hops, the herb, is a good treatment for common liver disease. Also, I'll be discussing how kidney stones can be avoided by drinking lemonade. And I'm sure many of you have been using green apples and lemons each morning. That's good. And also uncovering how low-protein diets might reprogram metabolism, University of Wisconsin. And also today, well, you get it, we've got a lot to share. But then I'm going to share something a little different. We have a lot of people in the medical profession and educators, professors, etc., who listen to the program. They consider pretty much a program of record, unlike the New York Times, which was a paper of record. We don't have any biases, no political, ideological agenda, just looking for the truth. And so one of the arguments that's been posited by the pro-vaccine individuals, and that's fine, pro or not to take the vaccine, either way, it's your choice, your body. They say, well, look at the statistics. They're the common good. Not that many people are injured, and it's safe and effective. So today, a graduate in engineering from MIT took the time to get the vaccine adverse reporting data system, and it's an hour long. I'm only going to take 4 minutes. But another person went to the CDC and went to that part of the CDC where it actually shows cause of death. And he found something really absolutely unique, and I watched it. And Richard Gale will be here to discuss these two. We're posting the vaccine adverse reporting system to show you that they have lied about how many people have been injured or died. The figure is much higher, but now we know how those people died. Before, you wouldn't know. And then they're changing it. And you actually get to see in real time, as one of these people are pointing out, here's a person, 19 years old, athletic, took the vaccine and died. Same day. Oh, now it's disappeared. And right in front of your eyes, they're disappearing statistics. Now, if someone told you that, they think, but that's not possible. That's conspiracy. No, you see it. And for an hour, he does this. So how many tens of thousands of names have disappeared? The other gentleman just goes through a chart the entire hour, and all you see are the figures. And then you suddenly see normal deaths, and then you see COVID deaths. Then suddenly, they spike way off the chart. What happened that day? Vaccines. And who was dying? Young people. Well, hold on, that can't be true. We're told, and we know the scientific literature shows, young people are not dying from COVID. Children, young people, teenagers, people in their 20s and 30s. That's correct. That's what the studies show. But the vaccine adverse event reporting, when you actually go through it, and now you can, we're posting it, so you can see in real time, and go to prn.fm, scroll down where it says Gary Noll's lecture notes, or show notes, and watch this for yourself. So this is no longer about I believe, I disbelieve, I don't believe. No, this is about actual statistics from the government. All right? So if you're pro-vaccine, you should be pro their statistics. And if your pro-vaccines are safe and effective, then how is it their information is absolutely contradicting that? Now, the New York Times, Rachel Maddow, no one else is going to show you this information. actual facts. We'll be here to do an analysis on that. Also, we have new information I'm going to do on my next program. Too much to put on this one. But in that information, it shows that there was a major virus laboratory in Canada, in Ottawa, and two Chinese scientists who had been working there were arrested as spies. They were taking deadly viruses to China. Where? Wuhan. The Wuhan lab? Same one? Yeah, same one. Where did they come from? The Wuhan lab. Why isn't that being discussed in the United States? Can't tell you that. But we can tell you that there are documents from their own peer-reviewed literature in China showing that they were working on weaponizing for biological warfare the bad virus. So interesting what is excluded from the conversation. We're inclusive. We don't cancel information as we don't cancel people because we may disagree with them. So we have a heavy show today. Let's begin. Why can some people weather the stress of social isolation better than others? And what implications does this have for their health? Have any of you seen the individuals living up in the Alaskan wild preserves? They're magnificent views of nature. But then the reality is it gets very cold. And those creatures out there are not little petting dogs. They're giant grizzlies, and they'll eat you. And then one guy's fishing for hours, a whole day. Then he swims across this gigantic river. And it's freezing. Why? Because must be food over there. So you have to wonder, what exactly does a person do when they're up in a place way, way far away from everyone? The weather's not good. But you're going to spend some time in what used to be called cabin fever. That wasn't about your body temperature. It was about struggling with loneliness. Today, people don't have to be in an isolated environment to be lonely. You can be in a relationship and be lonely. You can have people surrounding you and be lonely. So here's the bottom line to this, and this study shows this. New research from the Communications Neuroscience Lab at the Annenberg School of Communications, University of Pennsylvania, found that people who felt a strong sense of purpose in life were less lonely during the COVID pandemic. They achieved less loneliness by looking at life differently, having a strong sense of purpose. And by the way, this is not new. Go back to the 1950s. And who was the voice saying that those who survived concentration camps were more likely to be people who still had something to believe in, greater than their pain and suffering and privations? Great, great physician and philosopher. Who remembers his name? So that's just important. So each day, wake up and ask, what is my purpose today that honors today, that makes today important, that gives me some direction and focus and a sense of purpose and discipline and high-level values in what I'm going to do? For me, it starts with making the bed. Yeah, something that simple. Make the bed as best you can, and then just save the rest of the day. If I'm making a glass of juice, I'll say, who else? Well, I've only got a caretaker. Maybe Mike would like a glass of juice too. So then you add in a thoughtfulness, a sense of sharing. So I'll make extra juice. Or let's say I have a storm that brought down some branches, and there's specialists that can get those branches cut down. We're talking about 40, 50 feet in the air. And so I'll think, wonder what they had for breakfast. Did they even have breakfast? And so I'll go out and I'll make him a real big, wonderful breakfast. Something that when I talk to him, they're not eating. But they do. Then later you take him a big bowl of watermelon, ice cold watermelon. And they really appreciate it. Didn't have to do it. Chose to do it. And sometimes the things that surprise us in life are when people do something in a positive way that we weren't expecting. As my mother once told me, if you have to be asked by someone for help, you haven't been paying attention. So it's just the way you follow the day. Everything you do consciously. You do it with an awareness that we're all interconnected. I realize right now there's some, not a lot, not the best and brightest and most humane and thoughtful and spiritual among us, but there are the agitators who tear things down, including wanting to tear down our values and beliefs. And they will try, but they have to remember there are a few, let's say maybe 100,000. Watch what happens when the 200 million stand up and said, you don't speak for me. Don't assume that you have a right to change my values, my respect for all life, seeing the spiritual in all people. And those voices are beginning to be heard. So just imagine each day you put something important instead of just being more skeptical about everything and everyone. You put something that will replace loneliness, despair, a sense of being forgotten or overlooked, or that day has passed you. That day hasn't passed you. In fact, I just took some photographs of me picking some fruit for myself and for the animals that I have to oversee at this animal sanctuary. And there's nothing better than going out in the morning and finding like 15 different types of fruit. I planted all those trees, fertilize them every month. That's why they're so abundant. What was interesting was here are lychees. I planted a lychee tree 25 years ago. I planted a Cuban plum tree 25 years ago. And not a single piece of fruit until this year. And suddenly there are thousands of lychees, big, giant lychees. Now, I buy lychees down at the farmer's markets, $9 for a pound bag. And I'm going to guess, probably 500 to 1,000 pounds of lychees growing out there. In any case, I'm saving the seeds when I come back to New York. I'll bring some seeds in case anyone wants to plant their own. You start with a seed. And the same thing with the plums. Delicious, big red plums. Never saw one in the United States. In fact, I get trees from around the world. And my neighbor, this Chinese gentleman from China, he's a farmer. And he has like 100 types of fruit I've never heard of. He keeps saying, Gary, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? And I'm thinking, wow, all these wonderful things. So bring surprises into your day. Plant sprouts, and then a week from now, make yourself a big sprout salad. And grow some tomatoes, grow some blueberries. You can do that on your balcony. You can do it anywhere where there's going to get light. And just keep clipping it back. Remember, the more you clip back a vine, the greater its growth is. Like I cut half of all my trees down. Half. And that then fertilize it, and immediately it gives it strength, and now the fruits grow larger and more bountiful. You don't want a high fruit tree because the energy goes up, and so the energy is going into the growth of the tree, not in the fruit. But why would fruit suddenly grow now after 25 years? And then I saw something else that happened. There's two cactus that I brought from New York City from my apartment 26 years ago, and I planted them. The difference is I planted them 2 years apart. Within 3 years, they were the same size. And they stayed at about 9 foot, and now they're 20 feet in 6 months. And I ask, okay, that's a unique situation. Now I'm trying to figure it out. Anyway, I took pictures of guava, mango, bananas, just the things that every day I go out and get. And so if I do this, everybody else who has a backyard could do it. Even in upstate New York, I used to plant all types of lettuce in a little grow box, 3 foot by 3 foot, and it was 3 foot deep. I put insulation, rock, and clay in the bottom. And then I insulated the sides. I had a glass top on it with a little light bulb. In the middle of the winter with 3 foot of snow, I'd brush the snow off the top and open it up, and it was just as warm as toast, and I would cut off some of the leaves. By the way, never pick a whole piece of lettuce, whole head of lettuce. Cut the outer leaves, it'll grow back. I had one group of lettuce that I was able to harvest for over a year. One box. Why we think we've got to pick everything out of the ground once is just not the case. Anyhow, so I took some photographs. And for those of you who I haven't seen since our first upstate get-togethers, where we come up and do the cooking classes, and seen bread baking classes, some wonderful classes. Now you see what I look like. I look almost the same. Body is certainly the same. Face is the same. I'd like to see how you look 10, 20, 30, 40 years later. And by the way, to answer one person's questions who emailed my office, there's a new study out saying, well, you know, you can extend the lifespan, etc. Yes, you can. They're wrong. I've done it with four studies, and I'll critique their study, which is a theoretical study, versus mine, which is real, with real people. That'll be on an upcoming program. In any case, that's one way we can deal with loneliness and put more purpose and a higher quality of standards for ourselves back into each day. From University of Kansas Medical Center, women taking 1,000 milligrams of DHA daily in the last half of pregnancy had lower rates of early preterm birth than women who took the standard 200 milligram dose. So that's important. This was published in eClinical Medicine. So make sure you're getting your DHA every day, pregnant or not. We need it. Helps our heart. And Oregon State University found that there were phytonutrients in hops that can be used to treat common liver disease. And when dangerous builds up of fat in the liver occurs, known as hepatic steatosis, and you don't want that. And this helps with that. And resistance to insulin, the hormone that keeps control of blood sugar levels, is a risk factor for non-fatty liver disease and also from obesity in people on high-fat diets. So just want you to know that there's something that can turn the inflammation off in the liver. And so start looking, put it on your list, and one more piece of the puzzle, help our liver with a hops extract. Okay? This is just the beginning of this. And I'll give you more as time goes on. It's just a prenylated flavonoid that's produced by hops. And by the way, the plant is, that's what gives the beer its flavor and color. And and the kidney stones that so many people have can be avoided by drinking lemonade. University of California, San Diego. The pain of passing a kidney stone has been described as on par with natural childbirth. And urologists are increasingly prescribing an accessible natural remedy for kidney stones, lemonade. Why? Because the citric acid in the lemon juice has been proven highly effective in preventing kidney stones or slowing their formation substantially. So that's good news. That's easy. And who doesn't like some natural lemonade, right? And also, a lot of Americans have been under the idea they have to have a high-protein diet, especially bodybuilders and athletes. As a competitive athlete, and training right now, by the way, I'm going to try to set 3 state records in the fall in the next state championships. It is not high-protein that you benefit from. It is high-complex carbohydrate and lower protein. Because too much protein, the body can't store it. And the breakdown product, the deamidization of the amino acids, create urea and ammonium, both of which are toxic. So in this new study out of Australia that looked at how mice responded to dozens of controlled diets, when one thing caught their attention, the mice fed the least amount of protein were the healthiest. Isn't that interesting? So when vegans in particular think, I don't think I'm getting enough, well, it depends upon where you're getting your protein, But diets high in the three-branched chain amino acids, the BCAAs, are associated with diabetes, obesity, and other metabolic illnesses. Conversely, diets low in these can counter these metabolic ailments and even extend the healthy lifespan of rodents. So you want a brown rice, quinoa, amaranth, millet, all good. All the nuts, terrific. All of the beans, outstanding. Beans even give you better, more protein than either grains or nuts. Now have combinations of that, and you've got all the protein in your diet. Unless you're aging, and then you need a little more protein. That's the latest on health and healing. We are 21 minutes into our program. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to listen to this engineering graduate from MIT who has the chart. Now, if you watch it, and you can go to prn.fm and scroll down to Gary's notes, and you can watch it, and all it is, he's not hypothesizing, he's not speculating, he's merely showing you in red that the moment people took the vaccines, deaths just skyrocketed. Then another graph by a different person from a different agency of government shows how these numbers are disappearing. Young people in particular, their deaths are just, boom, vanished right in front of you. And he's showing you, he captured this right in front of you. He shows you, and then about a minute later, you go back, and it's gone. So something is really, really rotten with that government agency. Back in a moment to show you the truth about how you've been lied to from our federal officials about the mortality rates, and listen to the number he's giving, how many Americans have died from taking the vaccines, especially younger people.
I'm going to go through a bunch of items today. We're going to show you proof that there are over 25,000 excess deaths, and most all of those are due to the vaccine. We're told that the vaccines today are safe and effective, but is that really true? In this presentation, I will examine this statement, and I think you'll find the results are quite surprising. Let's start with the story of Simone Scott. I read this tweet, and it said 19-year-old Simone Scott was excited to get her second dose of Moderna's COVID vaccine on May 1. Now her mother, Valerie Kramer, is arranging her funeral. The sad thing is that Simone Scott is not alone. The question that we have to ask is, how many more healthy Americans must die before we say enough? How much longer are we going to look the other way and pretend that these vaccines are safe? There are over 25,000 excess deaths that have happened since December 20th, 2020, when vaccination started. Now, if it wasn't the vaccines that killed these people, what was it? And let's look at the COVID vaccine data. This is just to show you how obvious it is. Because if you're 20 or 30, you don't drop dead after you get a vaccine. You know, older people may die at any time. But when you're in the range of 20 to 30, you're pretty much not going to, if you're there one day, you're pretty much there the next day. Let's look at some of the records. So this person got vaccinated on the 21st, and the onset date is the 21st, and they died. They basically died the same day. The next one basically died 3 days later. Let's take a look at the details here. Sudden cardiac death after vaccine patient experienced headache, chills, fatigue, chest pain, did not seek medical care, witnessed cardiac arrest less than 3 days after vaccine number two. So I would say that, most people would look at this and say the vaccine killed him. And most people would look at the other one and say the vaccine killed him because it was on the same day. Let's look at this one. Days to onset, zero. So he got vaccinated on the 17th. Onset date of death was the 17th. After receiving the second dose of the vaccine, complained of stomach pain and feeling bloated, later had muscle pain, insomnia, and nausea, found dead at home on 6-1. So essentially 13 days later, he was found dead at home, but we don't know when he died. On April 15th, an otherwise healthy 30-year-old daughter of my cousin passed away in a hospital from a massive stroke and seizures related to encephalitis of unknown cause. She recovered easily from COVID-19, but she didn't survive the vaccine. She had no lingering effects. This person didn't need to be vaccinated. She was given a single dose of the Moderna vaccine along with her colleagues. She initially complained of mild nausea and vomiting, but quickly developed a severe headache, prompting her to visit her local ER, where she received treatment for migraine. Well, migraines are a big symptom of this vaccine, because what happens is the spike protein goes into your brain, and it opens up the blood-brain barrier, and all sorts of crap come in. So migraines are like a huge tip-off that this is vaccine-related. She returned to the ER at least one more time after no relief from the headache. By April 3rd, Saturday, she no longer recognized her sister, nor knew what a mask was for. Her family rushed her again to the same ER. She was subsequently transferred the following day to hospital. Due to dangerously high intracranial pressure, she suffered a stroke with paralysis on the left side, and seizure and multiple lesions were noticed on her brain via MRI. A shunt was inserted to relieve the pressure. She was intubated and placed in a deep coma from which she would never awaken. 30-year-old. Otherwise healthy 30-year-old. She never had to be vaccinated. Let's take a look at the CDC data. Now, this guy named Austin Walters sent me this in DM on Twitter, and I had not seen this before. So he shows you the vaccination rates, and you can see it going up and up and up, and you know it sort of flat lines here. It doesn't keep going up here. It tapers off because people who now we're going after the vaccine hesitant. You know, this is why we have prizes and all that stuff for the vaccine. And there's a reason for the vaccine hesitancy, because if you look at the it turns out that this vaccine doesn't just stay in your shoulder. It goes to all parts of your body, including your ovaries and your bone marrow. And it generates this spike protein, which turns out not to be benign. It's quite toxic. And it breaks off too, and it goes into the bloodstream. And when it's in the bloodstream, it can go into your brain. And in fact, it goes into your brain as well. And it starts cranking out spike protein inside your brain and inside your heart and inside, you know, all your organs, especially your ovaries and bone marrow. So this is all deaths for all ages, right? Sort of peaks at one day. And then if you're less than 7 years old, again, it peaks right at when they give the vaccination. It's supposed to be completely flat. It's supposed to look like this. It's supposed to like not even, it's just be total flatline. This is the vaccine cost the deaths. And there are a lot of deaths. So if you look at the OpenVerus data for COVID, there are almost 6,000 deaths.
Almost 6,000 deaths. Now, multiply that by what he's seeing on the actual chart for unexplained death. They've already explained heart disease, stroke, diabetes, and all these other conditions that people die from. But now, beyond all else, there's this huge spike in deaths, especially in younger people, and it can't be explained. Well, that's the vaccine. He estimates 25,000. The person you heard yesterday says 50,000. And mind you, this is in the first 6 months. Vioxx, arguably one of the two deadliest drugs ever given in American history, killed about 100,000 people minimally and injured a lot more with strokes and heart attack. And that was in the marketplace for 4 years. And even after all those deaths, the FDA did not demand it be pulled from the market. It was voluntarily withdrawn after 4 years. They paid a big fine. Profits went up. Nobody was held accountable. So if this continues as a trajectory, then what you're going to see is this could end up being the most deadly medical procedure ever done in American history, and yet nobody will be held accountable. And that's the way our system works. Richard Gale's on the phone right now. And Richard, I'm going to go through a few more articles that just came in today. Double whammy on autoimmune patients. This quote, "We've been detailing the scientific evidence showing the increased risk of serious adverse events for autoimmune patients receiving COVID vaccine. Emerging data is now showing that patients with compromised immune systems, such as those with," and then they give the whole list, "are at serious risk because the vaccine does not help their immune response." Now, you and I did the math on this. We studied all the different scientific literature and found about 130 million Americans suffer from some form of autoimmune condition. Therefore, those people would be well advised to speak with an immunologist or their physician and ask, based upon my autoimmune condition, should I have this vaccine? But look carefully, take the data with you, so that if your doctor is not up on this data, many are not, you will be. You don't want a medical decision made that works against you. You end up with iatrogenesis. But it has all these, quote, "One study found that patients with glucocorticoid medications severely," quote, "impeded a proper response to the vaccine." They didn't benefit. And a lot more of these conditions are showing that they're not benefiting. So why aren't those people being flagged so that they're not put at risk? But everybody, is, according to Bill Gates, Anthony Fauci, every human being on the planet should get the vaccine. That's genocide. Those people should be held accountable for crimes against humanity, because that's beyond stupidity. It's beyond hubris. That is gross negligence. Now, also today, from Trossite News, Dr. Alexander, Dr. Tenenbaum, and Dr. Dara, emergency use authorization for COVID vaccines in children 5 to 11 years old. The case has not been made. And then it goes into why the Food and Drug Administration, which is completely, totally compromised and has been captured by pharmaceutical interest, should not allow any of these COVID vaccines in children 5 to 11, because there is zero chance these kids are going to die from, and by the way, it's not just 5 to 11-year-olds, it's clear up to age 18 and even older. So you're medicating people for a condition that they're not going to be harmed by. So take it now from there, Richard, especially with this other video that we both watched in just absolute amazement of how, when the death causes of death were being explained in red, and these were younger people, and then within a second, suddenly it just disappears right off the screen. And this is a government website. Take it from there, please.
Yes, Gary. So there was another clip, but we couldn't find it again. It was just something we kind of accidentally came upon. And that was of somebody who's been looking at going right into the VAERS database. So the way the VAERS works is, if ever, you want to report an injury or a death, you can do it yourself. Doesn't have to be the physician. You're obviously assigned a number, okay, like a registration number when you enter the data. So everything should be sequential, right? It means, if whenever somebody comes in, it's a sequential number system. But what you're finding is if you go back and start just looking at earlier numbers, register numbers, these are empty. There's no entry for it. And what this person has also done was to be able to show that it captured earlier snapshots of, and these are usually deaths that are being scrubbed, not as much the injuries. It's the deaths that are being reported, and these are being scrubbed from the site. So that's the story with that one. But today's Friday, so we should be getting today or tomorrow or over the weekend, the new updates for the VAERS database of the number of injuries and deaths from the vaccine. But just what I did do, because we see a lot of numbers of deaths floating around, and so if we look at the the European database. Now, this is these figures is at, are as of a week ago because they had, they're only updated weekly. But with the European database, it's now at 13,800 deaths and 1,300,000 injuries. Pfizer is the takes up the majority of those. It's 140,000 injuries, and 2,000 of those deaths come from Pfizer. Now we look at the U.S., and the U.S., we're now at roughly 5,900 deaths. That's 1.8% of all injuries reported are deaths, and 329,000 injuries. Here's the dilemma. So we know that the European Union has a far more robust reporting system. There's much more regulation and more requirements in reporting it. So if we can say that's a much more accurate picture, a snapshot of the deaths and injuries being reported from the vaccines in Europe. So if we take the ratio of deaths per number of vaccines that are administered, which would seem like a reasonable approach to do this, and we compare that with the U.S., what are we going to come up with? Now, the European Union has just 2 days ago announced that they just passed 300 million doses have been administered, whereas in the U.S., as of today, we are at 368 million. Okay, so that's 68 million more doses have been administered. And so if we base it on the European figures, then the real number of deaths based on the European system, the real number of deaths in the U.S. should be about 17,000 to 18,000 right now. Okay.
So, okay, let's stop there for a moment. If we had 17,000 to 18,000 deaths from any medication, any medical procedure, it immediately would be stopped. There'd be a congressional investigation. States' attorney generals would be doing investigations. Not a word. Not a word from the mainstream media, the New York Times, CNN, not a word. This is utter corruption of the science. That's why we wrote the article that the people can download on GaryNoll.com on the corruption of science, and a new article is coming up next week. Second point, you talk about the citizen journalists. If you want to do a good story, look into the corruption of the media by trying to destroy the public interest in ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, and other proven antiviral and specifically anti-COVID viral medications that are safe, have been used by billions of people worldwide over decades, are very inexpensive. And you'll see that as if it were one voice, they all condemned these, said not to use them. So I was thinking, well, how's that possible? There are hundreds of studies in really great journals showing it works, but more importantly, there are now tens of thousands of physicians using these, and there's nothing in the world that they say would save a person's life better than ivermectin, either prophylactically or used in with, let's say, zinc. All of them use zinc and vitamin C, vitamin D, and some use an antibiotic like azithromycin. And yet, none of that is approved by our government. In fact, they attacked any doctor who would recommend this to the patient. And then I'm thinking, there has to be a motive. What is the motive? And then we find the law that shows that if you have a medication that's been FDA approved that could treat a person, then you cannot get emergency use authorization for a new drug since you already have one in place that can be used first. Ah, that's the motive. Why use something that costs pennies? Like ivermectin costs about a penny, one penny. They actually did the math on it. Versus a drug that is completely experimental, and when they and it's made over $1 billion for the manufacturer, and the American public paid for its research, and now the government just notified us they're giving $3.2 billion and $1.3 billion. To pharmaceutical companies to develop new antiretroviral drugs. But we already have old antiretroviral drugs that work, and they're not going to hurt anyone. And yet the corruption is so great that we're not going to be able to fight this unless everyone wakes up and doctors are waking up. Now, you've gotten the latest research on this to show the different studies that support this, Richard. Share that with our audience, please.
Okay. So there's a big rush, and this is being done throughout throughout the world, outside, of course, the UK and the United States and Canada that have perhaps the most the benefit by promoting novel, innovative, customized new drugs like Remdesivir, which is the one that's being touted now in the U.S. So, but there's plenty of information on other repurposed drugs. And the main ones we've been hearing about are ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. And more recently, there has been a lot of evidence on this fluvoxamine. Now, fluvoxamine is an SSRI drug, so it's used for ADHD, anxiety, depression disorders, but it's being prescribed in very, very small doses. But I'll get back to that. Ivermectin, it's showing about an 85% improvement as a prophylaxis. That's based on 97 studies, and 61 of those studies were actual trials, 31 randomized controlled trials that involved a total of 19,000 patients or participants in those trials. Out of those 97 studies, only two of those trials have been reporting adverse or that they've been negative. So, and those are the two studies that are always touted by those that oppose the widespread use of ivermectin, like Bill Gates and Gavi and the CDC. So that's with ivermectin. And as I said, 85% improvement of as a prophylaxis. So if you feel like you got a cold or you're going to go into a crowded place and you take just a small number of milligrams of that, that will protect you. 76% improvement for early stage COVID viral infection. The hydroxychloroquine has, and now these are just studies only looking at COVID. Okay. These drugs have been around for decades. So there's many, many more studies for other kinds of parasitic conditions, but we're only looking at here for the COVID studies. So there's been 307 studies and 227 of those studies have been peer reviewed for hydroxychloroquine. And that's showing about 60% early treatment. There's some more studies that have been negative on it, but most of those studies were giving very high doses. Vitamin D actually there's 85 studies that have been performed already looking at vitamin D in COVID, and but only 27 were actually treatment studies because most of those studies concerned the fact that the majority of people are vitamin D deficient. So there's like 58. Those studies were sufficiency studies, but that's still showing a 56% improvement. So, we're looking at combo therapies here. You can take some of these together. The fluvoxamine, as I mentioned, but the only issue with fluvoxamine, there's only been six studies performed so far, but it's showing an 88% improvement at late stage. And one of those studies had 93%. So, fluvoxamine looks like one of the more promising of the drugs for late-stage COVID infections.
Okay, but Richard, we got to go on from here. But thank you for that. But what we're showing you is this: that we, within the scientific community, have had all of these all the medical doctors have had these non-toxic medications that are antiviral and anti-COVID, with really high statistical survival and prevention and prophylactic use. It's been used in other countries. It's now being used, ivermectin, in India, the largest populated state in India. And their death statistics now, even without the vaccine, are almost down to flatlined. That is what it does. And yet Fauci, Bill Gates, and others have had the power to control the media and legislators to prevent you from knowing this and having something that is safer and more effective than anything in any medical procedure that we can do. So you've been lied to. You've been used. And it's time that you push back and let and ask for congressional, independent congressional investigations. Nothing would I trust out of our current government, left or right, or the Justice Department, because they're all corrupt to the core. Thank you very much, Richard. Okay. And mind you, we send that over to Jesse. We will post all of our statistics so you can see them for yourself. Now to some other news. I want to hit some other topics now, because I've gone heavy to give you as much as I can. One of the listeners sent me an email about Joe Biden speaking in this conversation about how NATO's a great ally and is very good. And the United States does not, unlike Russia, we do not ever involve ourselves in other people's elections. Well, that seems reasonable. I go along with that, wouldn't you? Except I found just a little tiny, almost insignificant challenge. Carnegie Mellon University study. From 1946 to 2000, the United States interfered in 81 national democratic elections in other countries. 59% of those were successful. The U.S. in the intervention in Russia goes back to Woodrow Wilson's administration when Woodrow Wilson, included the Soviet Union in his maritime blockade of Germany in 1918, sent thousands of U.S. troops under General Graves to the Russian port of Vladivostok. In Italy in 1948, the U.S. threw all of its resources into getting the Italian Democratic Party to defeat the Communist Party. The U.S. intervention in Syria actually goes back to 1949, when Syria became an independent republic under civilian rule. The CIA supported a coup by the Army Chief of Staff, Zaim, to end civilian rule. Once in power, Zaim conceded power to the United States for transport of oil, and signed an armistice with Israel. In Iran in 1953, well-known CIA-led staged coup to oust Prime Minister Mossadegh, who decreed policies to nationalize the country's oil and threaten profits of British Petroleum. U.S. media declared Mossadegh as a dictator. He was not. He was an intellect, and when nothing could be further from the truth. In Guatemala in 1954, the CIA involved in deposing President Jacob Arbenz and installing a military dictatorship that protected the interests of the U.S. fruit company called United Fruit, and that was the Dulles brothers who headed the CIA and State Department. From 1955 to 1970, the CIA supported Tibetan insurgency to destabilize China's control over the country. The Dalai Lama has said publicly that, quote, the CIA supported the Tibetan independent movement not because the CIA cared about Tibetan independence, but as part of their worldwide efforts to destabilize all communist governments, end quote. Repeatedly since 1959, the United States and the CIA and the Pentagon have attempted to overthrow the Castro regime in Cuba. In 1963, in Vietnam, the U.S.-backed coup by South Vietnamese military officers against President Diem, RFK, supported the sham elections that allowed Diem to win by 98% of the vote, so the U.S. could tout the regime as being democratically elected in the will of the people. His brother JFK and Robert Kennedy both were part of that. The Democratic Republic of the Congo, in a five-year war from 1960 to 65, Patrice Lumumba was democratically elected as the country's first prime minister after gaining freedom from Belgian colonialism. The CIA supported Belgian business interests and with hundreds of European mercenaries, supported Joseph Mobutu to seize power in a revolt. And needless to say, they killed him and Patrice Lumumba. Iraq from 1960 to 63, for a brief period, one person ruled as a dictator in Iraq. And this was followed by the CIA special operation to stage a coup, which led to Qasem being executed and the U.S. supporting the Ba'athist Party, who came to power and eventually put Saddam Hussein in power. We, the United States, put Saddam Hussein in power. Brazil, 1964, democratically elected President Goller was overthrown in a U.S.-backed military coup under President Johnson. In Chile, 1970-73, famous case of democratically elected Marxist president Salvador Allende being overthrown by the U.S. back Augusto Pinochet, which led to his tyrannical rule and murder sprees of Chilean intellectuals and opposition, all supported by the U.S. government, and especially Henry Kissinger, still alive today. Take him out of the mothballs and try him. Turkey, 1980, the U.S. created a CIA-backed Turkish-American Defense Council, founded by Richard Perle, to organize and stage a military coup. In Poland in 1980, the U.S. support based on CIA intelligence of a Solidarity movement. In Haiti in 1986, intelligence support for the repressive and terrorist Duvalier clan after Baby Doc was ousted by the people and Aristide was elected. The U.S. has always been an enemy of liberation theology and its proponents in Latin America and in the Caribbean. In Nicaragua in 1990, U.S. support in the CIA interference against the Marxist Sandinistas, Daniel Ortega. In Czechoslovakia in 1990, the U.S. involvement with Havel's Velvet Revolution against the Communist Party in power. In 1996, Clinton gave ongoing support to keep Yeltsin in office against his opponents and to keep the Russian economy failing, including a $10 billion loan through the International Monetary Fund focused solely on privatization and trade liberalization that destroyed the Russian economy but really benefited a lot of people in the United States and Wall Street. Venezuela, 2002, Bush backed a coup by the aristocratic Venezuelan families against Hugo Chavez. The Gaza Strip, 2006 to today, Hamas won fair democratic elections. I do not support Hamas, by the way, but the U.S. has continuously attempted to overthrow it. By the way, Hamas was originally a moderate and small Palestinian organization that was supported by the Israeli intelligence to create a wedge between the PLO, and their plan backfired on them. Honduras, 2009, Hillary Clinton personally was responsible for making sure that there was regime change in Honduras, forcing the socialist and populist elected Zelaya into exile in a military coup. And Paraguay, 2012, U.S. meddled in conservative right-wing party to have democratically elected socialist Lugo impeached. Ukraine, 2014, Obama had admitted the U.S. brokered a deal with anti-Russian parties, which were neo-fascist, to oust democratically elected pro-Russian president Viktor Yanukovych. But look, that's just the beginning. I don't have time to go into all of it. You know, Guatemala in 1954, British Guiana 1953 to 1964, Cambodia 1955 to 1970, Laos 1958, 59 and 60, Ecuador 1960 to 63, Bolivia 1963 to 64 to 71, Indonesia 1965, Greece 1967, Australia 1973 to 75, Portugal 1974 to 76, Jamaica 1976 to 1980. All over the world, the United States has engaged in government-supported, meaning State Department, Defense Department, Pentagon, and of course the entire military-industrial complex and spy agencies to oust anyone who does not support hegemony and our dominant rule. But then again, what are facts? When you have a president who says, we've never done anything to upset any election. Well, guess we got to believe him and not history and not all the dead and suffering and not all the people who've been destroyed. Well, just ask the New York Times. They'll tell you who to believe. Or Anderson Cooper. They'll certainly tell you who to believe. And none of what I just told you will they mention. Because this is the truth, something they are completely disconnected from. Thank you all for listening and have a nice day.